Hey, this is Amy Sampson, and you're joining me on episode 11 of That Trip Didn't Suck. In this very special episode today, I go over a trip of a lifetime I never wanted to go on, I never expected, and it is a outtake from another podcast from a friend of mine, Jackie Doyle and Dave Gilbert, and their podcast called Profiles in Perseverance. So thank you so much, Jackie and Dave, for allowing me to share your podcast on my podcast. So I hope that when you're finished with today's episode, you'll walk away with some tools you can use and some insight into, if not your own life, someone else's. So thanks for joining me today, and I'm looking forward to hearing from you guys, just some feedback about this episode.
Hello again, and welcome to another episode of Profiles in Perseverance, where we hear inspirational stories to fight the good fight and run the good race to do the best we can in some trying circumstances. I'm Jackie Doyle, along with Dave Gilbert, and today we're going to talk to a special friend of mine, Amy Sampson. Amy and I grew up in the same very small town of DeKalb, Missouri, which is about 30 minutes south of St. Joseph. And whenever we say we're from DeKalb, we always had to follow it by saying where it's located. Right, Amy?
I think the problem I run into is not always where that. It's DeKalb, what? And then I say, yeah. It's spelled like DeKalb, Illinois, but we pronounce it DeKalb or DeKalb.
Yeah, that's another that thing, is the pronunciation.
That is the first thing, is the pronunciation. You cannot, it is not DeKalb. So
yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Did you hail DeKalb? No, sorry. Never mind.
No.
Okay.
That's a good one. That's awesome. So. Well, it's about 200 people. And I had the pleasure of growing up with Amy. I won't say how much older I am than Amy, but I loved the town, and especially Amy came from a great family. Her grandparents meant a lot to me. Her parents meant a lot to me. She just comes from a long line of family, a great family line. And you know, I was talking with Dave before the podcast, and I was telling him that you actually have a road, Sampson Road, named after you.
Yes.
In DeKalb.
Yes.
And so what is that about? Like, how do you do that?
It's not named after me personally, but, you know, when you live in a small area for many generations, so I'm the eighth generation to live on my farm. But Sampson Road is actually, I think, 3.5 miles south of where I live. And it just so happened that for years, everyone that lived on that road was a Sampson or a relative of a Sampson or a descendant of a Sampson. And even now, gosh, there's still a good lot of people who live on that road who are related to us in some way. A lot of times it's through marriage now, but I don't know how it got named for us or when that happened, but everyone just knows Sampson Road. And I think one of my relatives, I won't say which one, tried to steal the sign one year.
Seriously.
Yeah, I mean, and I don't blame them. I don't blame them. It wasn't me, but.
Are you sure it wasn't you?
No, I've never stolen a sign. So.
That would be tempting, though, I have to admit.
I know.
Well, I brought on Amy today because you have so many examples of perseverance in your life, Amy. You've been such an inspiration to me. You've done Ironman triathlons. You've done marathons. You ran the Boston Marathon. You've traveled all over the place. You've been a teacher, an English teacher forever. You got like 11 Fulbright grants, you know, during your lifetime. You have 4 degrees. You've gone through a lot of traumatic experiences in your life. You've dealt with a lot of anxiety and depression in spite of all those achievements. You know, what was it like? You know, how do you think growing up in that small town helped you get through all of those experiences of perseverance?
I think a lot of it is, when I think of what I went through you know, and I can say this in hindsight because hindsight's always 20/20, right? But going through my depression, not even singular, because I've been through depression multiple times, it's, I think the thing that kind of carries me through each time at my core is my friendships and my family. And, you know, I have a core group of friends that every Christmas I go back and hang with. And it is, the older I get, the more I realize how rare that is to have childhood friends. And, you know, I was going through some stuff a couple years ago and I messaged them and said, you know, hey, here's what I'm going through. I might need some extra support the next couple months. You know, if I need something or I need a place to stay or I need someone to talk to, is that something that you could help me with? And, you know, 2 out of my 5 friends immediately replied within, you know, 10 minutes and said, yes, call me. Yes, message me. And, you know, the other ones all responded as well. But, you know, and then just having the support of my family, you know, I am very lucky to have really good parents, and I have a really good brother and sister that I can also talk to at any time. And I can definitely say, like, my lowest low, like the lowest day I ever had in my life, my brother was the one who was there for me. And I'm not saying that anybody else didn't do their job in my life or due diligence, but my brother, like, literally saved my life on the darkest day of my life. And I don't know if he knows that, but, you know, and so when I go through things, even now, I'm much better. Because I didn't always have the, what you want to call, like, coping skills and, like, coping strategies to get through things. I had poor coping mechanisms, I'll call it that. And, you know, now that I'm older, you know, and have gone through, like, my first bout of depression was when I was 35 and 36. And, you know, 9 years removed from that, I now know that when I'm struggling, and, like, you know, I've struggled a lot in the last year, the first thing I do is go to friends or family or both and say, hey, I'm struggling right now. I might need an extra listening ear, or I might need to vent, or I might need a phone call, you know, and I don't want to burden you, but just know that I'm saying this because I need someone there. So I've found that what I took for a little bit granted in my childhood, I've learned now that as an adult and 9 years past my, you know, the start of my worst depression, to really the first thing I do before I even talk to my therapist is I reach out to somebody to say I'm struggling.
You've obviously accomplished a lot in your life, but I'm struck by the fact that you said you kind of hit the first real true episode or big episode of depression in your 30s. Do you look back earlier and say, oh, now that I know what it is, I saw it was there before? Or is it something that kind of appeared later in life that you persevered through in all your earlier successes?
Yeah, that's a great question. I've actually thought about that. And I actually, my current roommate, so I actually own an Airbnb, and she's an Airbnb guest. She's a psychologist. She actually believes that I've struggled with anxiety my whole life, and that it manifested itself in different ways. And I just kind of tell her, no, I was just a worrier. So I'm always a worrier, but my type of worrying, my worrying style is more of, like, empath and caring. And I don't go so far that I take on other people's feelings, but I'm very empathetic. And, you know, like, when one of my friends or family is hurting, I feel that pain because I can relate to that pain. It's not that I feel their pain, you know, on that level, but you know what I'm saying? Like, I feel that. And sure. I, you know, I went through just some losses. Like, I lost one of my best friends in college, 2 weeks before our sophomore year of college. She was a really good friend. We went to church together. We were teammates, college teammates. We played college volleyball and basketball together. And losing her, I would say I was probably depressed, but I didn't know what it was. So ignorance is bliss. And, you know, with my teammates and friends, our sophomore year, it was more just leaning on each other and, crying and just knowing that every game was a game without Rachel. And, you know, looking back on that, that was probably depression, but it also didn't feel the same way. But I'm also learning that every time I go through a bout of depression, none of them feel the same, which I've kind of found to be, that's a learning curve too. Because, you know, when I went through it the first time, I thought, well, oh, if I go through this again, it's going to feel the same. And it doesn't. It feels very different every single time. And that's kind of interesting too, is what your body knows prior, but what your body is experiencing in the moment. And so that's kind of interesting too. The older, like I said, the more things I go through or don't go through, and the more time that passes, I'm one of those people, I like to learn about myself. So I've read just an insane amount of literature and research about anxiety and depression, just trying to figure out what happened to me and why I went through this and why I struggled so much. And I have an amazing therapist that I've had for 3 years now. And, you know, if I get kind of stuck on something, I'll message her and we talk about the science of stuff, because I love the science behind things. And I kind of like that too. And some of my friends are, they kind of make fun of me about that. They're like, why don't you just let it be? And I'm like, no, I want, when I understand the science behind something and why my brain works or why somebody else's brain works, it actually gives me more compassion for myself and compassion for others.
I think that is a great point, because so many times I think when we go through depression or anxiety, it's just this vague feeling and we don't really know what to do. But when you can define it, then you can actually get a grasp of what's happening. So can you kind of share some of that scientific information you've learned with us that's helped you get through things?
There's a ton of it. I think I'll start with depression first. So the thing I think I've learned about depression the most, and I don't know scientific terms, so I don't memorize them, but I can tell you that depression doesn't look the same every time. I can tell you the first time that I remember having it was the most severe. And the way I describe it to people is that my imagination was broken, where I could not imagine myself having two good days in a row. That is exactly how I felt. And luckily, one of my friends and doctors, I had a complete meltdown in December, and I was in her office, and I remember having a conversation with her, and I said, Allison, when am I going to get better? She goes, I don't know. I just know you will. And I said, how do you know that? And she said, Amy, I've been there. And I knew her story because we'd been friends, and I believed her. And because I knew her story and because I believed her, I believed in that moment that I could get better, even though I couldn't imagine myself getting better. And whenever I talk to people who also struggle, one of the first things I tell them is I say, I'm here for you and you'll get better. And I will also say, I don't know exactly what you're going through 100%, but I've been depressed before. And I just want them to know that there is that possibility of getting out of it. And another thing I've kind of learned with depression is I had a friend a couple weeks ago. She said, well, how did you get better? And she goes, and don't say time. And I said, here's what I told her. And I said, again, I don't know scientific terms for these things. I said, but with depression, time doesn't heal you. It's everything that's held within that time that heals you. You know, it can be, and I told her, I said, there's no one thing that saved me, right? Like God alone didn't save me. Traveling alone didn't save me. Therapy alone didn't save me. Running alone didn't save me. It was 5,000 things that saved me. It really was. There's no one thing that saved me from my depression. I have a list of probably not 5,000 things, but at least 20 to 30 things that saved me. And you can't see that when you're in it. That's part of it too, is a lot of times you just can't see it. And that's why it's so important. I tell people when you're depressed, it's so important that you find a therapist. And if your first therapist you don't gel with, then find a second therapist, find a third therapist, because you're going to find somebody. And with anxiety, gosh, anxiety is a little bit more of a struggle for me. I didn't have anxiety until after I went through depression, and I don't know why, it just popped up. And I think the biggest thing for me that I've learned in my, you know, studying and research and reading is just accepting it. So sometimes I don't like talk to it, but I kind of treat it as a physical thing that exists in a room. You know, for example, like there's a cactus or a plant over there. Oh, there's anxiety over there on the shelf. And I've also kind of figured out how to name my emotions. And I kind of go back to Brené Brown. I love Brené Brown, but her, one of her more recent books is Atlas of the Heart, where she talks about naming your emotions. And what she kind of maintains is that a lot of times we focus on, when people say, how are you? We usually say one of three things. I'm happy, sad, or angry, or upset, right? And she said that one of the things that we can do to just help ourselves in any situation, positive or negative, is vocabulary. And it's, and of course I get excited about that because I'm an English teacher, but
right,
you know, so like naming my emotions. So I'm anxious, but why am I anxious? Right. So what emotion is really behind that? Is it, am I scared? Am I upset? Am I, you know what I'm saying? Like, what is the actual emotion? And what I've actually found, believe it or not, is, and I challenge anybody who's listening to this, if you struggle with anxiety, there is one root word that you will struggle with more than others. And it's going to be the foundation of your anxiety. So the foundation of all of my anxiety is safety. And it's not necessarily about being scared. So it's not like, oh man, I'm going to get, you know, hit by a car in the street, or, oh, I'm going to get, you know, somebody's going to injure me at work. You know, it's not that kind of stuff. It's where I just don't feel safe, whether it's safe with a person, safe with something I've thought. Safe is a very broad word for me. So I've found myself, like, sometimes I don't feel safe to have a conversation, or I feel scared to have a conversation. So I think, but that's been one of the most important things to help me, because I also have non-situational anxiety. I have hormonal anxiety, you know, related to just being old. And I've found, though, that I can now compartmentalize those. I can separate them. So I can, whenever I'm having anxiety, I can stop and I can say, okay, what am I having anxiety about and why? Is this hormonal or did something happen? And then if something happens, then I can name emotions with that. And then I just have to write it out, right? And, you know, I have prescription and non-prescription things that I take. I have like a natural B vitamin that's like helps, and I always start with that. And then if that doesn't cut it, then I have a prescription that I take as needed. And I also tell people, like, you know, I used to be very anti prescription drug for depression and anxiety, and I've kind of found that I had to let that go. And, you know, and I don't feel bad about it. I don't abuse what I take. I take it when I need it and it works. And, you know, I just tell myself, you're going to feel better tomorrow, or you're going to feel better after you talk to someone. And, you know, I think with depression or anxiety, either one, it's a learning curve, but you have to be willing to figure out what's making you tick and what's going to help you get better. But then the other thing I tell people at the heart of all of it, two things, especially with depression. One is, depression is smart. And what I mean by that is, I compare it to an octopus. So octopus, they're very intelligent, right? They're one of the most intelligent animals on the planet. And depression is like that. Depression, like, changes your brain. It changes who you are. And when you go through it again, it's like, you know, like with an octopus, you cut the tentacle off, it might regrow, or it might relearn, or it knows how to get out of a hole. And your brain is doing that, and you don't realize it. And so what I tell people is, just remember that depression has its own almost brain. And it's not that you have to outsmart it. You have to find things to keep fighting it, and know that it's going to look different every time you face it, because it's not even the same situation. It might be similar situations, but you have to figure out how to do that. And then the second thing I tell people, myself included, is, you're never going to get better unless you want to get better. And whether you're a religious person or not, I read this story a couple of years ago. There's a biblical story in the Gospels where Jesus has this man who comes to him, and he says, you know, Jesus, I want you to save me. I want you to heal me. And Jesus said, okay, do you want to be healed? And I remember reading that story and thinking, why would Jesus ever ask somebody if they want to be healed, right? Like, he already knew that the person needed to be healed. but that story helps us understand, as people who go through anything, whether it's physical or mental, that we have to want to be healed before we can even move towards healing, right? Like if I injure my knee, I can want to get better, but if I don't go to the doctor and want to get it looked at and want to get an X-ray or an MRI, I can't get better. And those are kind of the big things I tell people, and even myself, is like, I can waller in my anxiety and depression and I can play the victim, but it gets old, you know, and it gets old for people around you, but it gets old in your own mind as well. And you have to want to get better. You have to want to change.
These are, you know, obviously heavy burdens at times. Maybe not all the time, thank God. But I'm also struck because I believe Jackie told me you've been to, like, I can't remember how many countries. You're this huge traveler. Traveler yeah. in itself is stressful, but do you have to kind of fight through the what ifs in your mind to do these kinds of things, or do you find these actually help you, or you just seem very active for someone that would be, you know, kind of also kind of dealing with these other things?
Yeah, and that's the age old question I even battle with myself, is like, I consider myself to be very successful. Like, I've done everything on my list professionally as a teacher that I've wanted to do. You know what I mean? I've won every grant that I've wanted to win. I mean, there's always ones that will pop up in the next couple of years that I'll apply for, but you know what I'm saying? Like, I've done everything I've wanted to do in life, like truly, except for like maybe one or two things, but like professionally, I've done everything I wanted to do. Travel wise, I don't hold back. You know, you're right. I've been to 44 countries as of right now. Yeah. By the end of 2024, I think I will be at around 49 countries, I think. Yeah. So, yeah, because I'm going to Scotland, and then I'm going to go to Portugal and Spain this summer. And then I actually just won the National Geographic Grosvenor's Fellowship, and I'm going to Argentina and Chile in October. So,
that's incredible, Amy.
It's exciting. So like, I sit there and I'm like, I'm so proud of myself, and my friends are proud of me, and my mom and dad are proud of me. Like, the joke with my mom is I call and she's like, "What'd you win this time?" I'm like, "Mom, I just want to talk to you about, you know, my hair." So, but you know, it is this strange like antithesis that I have inside of myself, where I am very successful, but I struggle. I really struggle. And it's just been more in my later years, and I don't want to struggle, but I do. And the good thing though is that I've, you know, like I said, I have these things in place to help me. Like, I have a therapist that is amazing. You know, I have FMLA at work if I need to take it for anxiety or depression, like I can. You know, I have a really good support system. I have friends that I talk to, you know, every day or every other day, that, you know, people that always check in with me. And so, yeah, so it's weird. It is a weird place to be in. But at the same time, I also think I'm not alone. I think, I don't know if it's COVID or post-COVID that's done this to us, but I think that the older I get, the more people there are who are willing to be transparent enough to say, "Oh, hey, I've also struggled, and I haven't always," you know what I mean? And I don't always struggle. I think if you look back in the last year, you know, that's why I like Facebook memories and stuff, is I have more good days than bad. But when those bad days come, I mean, gosh, sometimes they just take it out of you, you know? Really. And so like when I plan for trips though, they actually help me. I actually, I'm an Enneagram 3. So Enneagram 3s are achievers. But I'm also a 4, which is a creative. So basically I'm somebody who's, I always joke that I'm super high achieving, but I have a lot of ADD. And so I'll go and do the thing, but the things also help me, right? So like, for example, like I'm kind of going through, you know, some stuff in a couple facets of my life right now. But at the same time, I'm like, well, I've got Scotland to look forward to. I've got Portugal to look forward to. So it actually like gives my brain something to focus on that's not focused on whatever the struggle is in the day. And that's the Enneagram 3 in me, you know, where mm-hmm. it's not necessarily about the achievement, because I'm not achieving anything by traveling. per se, but it's the adventure. And I think, you know, everything's an adventure is what I tell people. Like, I can go to a new restaurant and be just excited about going to a new restaurant as I am about going to Portugal, you know, which is, it's true. Like, I get excited about new things. I love new things. And so that's also, you know, it's kind of hope, I guess. And, you know, one of my friends and I kind of joke that hope is a pipe dream, but at the same time, like, even if hope is a lie, like, it's still something. You know, even if going to a new right. restaurant on the weekend is seems like nothing, it's still something that I'm looking forward to.
Right.
So,
yeah.
Which Absolutely. Is interesting, because one reason I asked is that I have a family member that has struggled with anxiety some. And it's the fear of becoming anxious in certain situations that leads this person to maybe avoid the situation. But it sounds like you don't really avoid situations. You plan and look forward, or maybe you do. I don't know.
a little bit. And, like, it's interesting that you say that. So one of the most recent things I've read is a book by Dr. Nicola Perra. I don't know how you pronounce her last name, LaPerra. So her first book was called How to Do the Work. And her book focuses on being a self-healer. It's not focused on necessarily, like, anything other than you have the ability in yourself, if you're willing to be healed, to work on yourself enough to almost heal yourself. Now, she's not anti-therapy at all, but her book is fantastic for people who are apprehensive of therapy. But her recent book is called How to Be the Love You Seek. And so in that book, I recommend, if you don't want to read the whole book, read, I think it's chapters 4, 5, 8, and 9, but she talks about attachment styles. So attachment styles are kind of a new buzzword, and they're interesting, though, because, you know, like you were saying, your family member is avoiding things, right? So what is there? There's, like, avoidant attached, anxious attached, chaotic attached. There's, like, all these attachment styles. But it's really fascinating because if you read about them, that plays into anxiety and depression. It plays into your relationships, and it plays into how you interact with people who are the same as you or opposite of you. And also, there's so many layers to it. Oh my gosh, I could go off on 20 tangents. There's layers of, like, you know, your family interactions, your romantic interactions, your work interactions. And so, you know, I would encourage anybody to read that book. And if you don't want to read the book, just to look up attachment styles, because once I learned about mine, then you start being self-aware, right? Mm-hmm. And then you're like, oh gosh, like, okay, I'm going to be anxious if I'm in the situation. But then again, if you're self-aware, you can't be ignorant of who you are. And then, you know, sometimes it's figuring out little things like that that can cause you to change for the better or to work through something that's a struggle. And so, like I said, that's kind of I don't know if it's newer, but it's definitely, like, hitting a lot of these like psychology type books that are, you know, in the mainstream right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What's your advice, Amy? You know, you mentioned, like, on the outside, you're so successful, right? And I know people who struggle with depression, myself included, we hide it. So yes. We typically hide it. So what would be your best advice that if someone sees someone who's struggling with depression, how should we approach them?
I think first, it kind of depends on your relationship with them. But obviously, if you feel comfortable or you feel led, you should not hold back. And it doesn't have to be anything crazy. It can be a card. It can be a text. It can be, you know, just a quick conversation in the hallway if you work with them. But I think the big thing is just saying, like, hey, you haven't seemed like yourself lately. You can just say something like, you know, do you need someone to talk to? Or even if you don't want to ask a question, just saying, like, I just want you to know I'm here for you if you need something. Mm-hmm. And, or even, like, if you're worried, because some people get even anxious about saying that to someone, just saying something like, you know, I could be off here, you know, but I just, you haven't seemed like yourself lately, you know, if I'm wrong, cool, you know, you can kind of be kind of coy about it. But I think the big thing is just saying something. Like, it doesn't have to be anything exciting and elaborate. It doesn't have to have bells and whistles and, you know, emojis around it.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
It's just you being authentic and concerned, and just say, I think the biggest thing that you know, if we see somebody, is just saying, I'm here if you need something, you know. And I teach, so I tell my students at the beginning of the year, you know, I'm not a licensed counselor or therapist, but if you need something, please say something, and I will make sure to get you to the person who can help you. You know, and so depending on the situation, you know what I'm saying? So that's an example of a situation where I give the kids the ability to talk to me, but I give them the ability to know that I'm going to help them find somebody. And then I have like books in my classroom. I had a student last year who was struggling, and I bought some books. I bought some self-help books so this kid could read them. And sometimes it's resources, right? So if you're, whether you are or aren't depressed, it's reading books and learning about what you've been through or learning about what somebody else is going through. You know, like I had a friend a couple of years ago who was an alcoholic, and I've never been an alcoholic. I don't understand that. So I read books about it so I could understand it, you know, so I could help them. And then like for myself, like, you know, I've read a lot of books. I always say my favorites are, and I don't know authors, but probably the, if you want to do like a list of things like to put on your radar if you're struggling, is the What Happened to You. And Oprah is one of the co-writers on that book. Anything by Dr. Nicole LaPera, like I said, the How to Do the Work or the How to Be the Love You Seek. And then of course, anything by Brene Brown. If you struggle with shame, a lot of women struggle with shame, whether through eating or just who they are. Daring Greatly is by far the number one book, you know, so it's part of that is resources. I lend books to people constantly. Where I'll buy them. I'm like, what do you want? I'll buy you a book, you know?
Yeah.
So, but yeah, just reaching out, you know, like I said, it's just, it's something little, but it's the world, right? Mm-hmm. It's the world. Somebody sees you and somebody is like, wow, like, okay, somebody saw me, you know, somebody wanted to have a conversation with me.
Yeah.
And wants to be there for me. And that's, I think that's part of it. Like, but that's the biggest thing is like, we're, everybody struggles in life. And just the biggest thing we need is each other to get through that.
Yeah. And obviously there's a, you know, a legitimate and full-blown crisis. We hear all the time now, mental health crisis, and you hear about, at least I do, it seems like depression and anxiety seem to be at the top of the list. So, it's all around us. You mentioned, you know, being open with your students. Do you feel kind of led to be a voice in the solution in all this with your family, friends, and those around you to share your experiences and what you've learned?
I do. And I'm not pushy with it, meaning like I don't just tell everybody my story openly. You know, a lot of times I wait for someone to ask to hear my story, or if I don't wait for it, I will ask them and just say, hey, I know you're struggling. Would you like to hear my story? Or can I tell you something that happened to me? And then like with students, same thing, like I'm not overt with them. I just will say like, I've been through severe depression multiple times in my life. And I just say, you know, usually it's just a blanket thing, like I've struggled, and I know that you struggle. And I know you've been through some things. So if that's something that you need, like, you know, then I'm here for you, right? And that's kind of part of it too, is just again letting them know you're there, and then when they're ready to hear your story. And I was telling you guys before we started recording, I had a friend a couple weeks ago who was struggling, and I knew that she was struggling, but I didn't know how bad it was. And I remember there was one day a couple weeks ago where I literally stayed on the phone with her, I think 10 hours. And today she told me, you helped save my life.
Oh, wow.
And
10 hours.
10 hours.
That's like, amazing.
Like on and off, but like she was having a really bad day. I wasn't having a great day either, but you know, and most of our conversation wasn't about anything. It was just us like talking. But in hindsight, for both of us, we like realized like that particular week, I mean, she just lost it. She just lost it. Like going through a horrible divorce and some things that happened to her family. And like it all hit horribly, like on the same day within like 24 hours, like a bunch of different situations. And, you know, even her ex at one point said, "Here's some sleeping pills. I hope you take them someday and die."
Oh my goodness.
You know?
Wow.
Yeah. Jeez. Right. So, and like, I didn't know that. And, you know, where I'm going with that though, is in that 10-hour conversation, true story, 9 hours in, maybe 8 hours in, she said, "How did you get through your depression? What happened to you?"
Wow.
Wow.
8 hours in. And that's the thing, amazing. Is we don't know. Yeah. You don't know how many hours into a conversation or how many days into a friendship that you're going to get before somebody says, "I need help," or "What did you do?" Or, you know what I'm saying? Like, you just don't know. And the same thing for me, like when I look at what I went through, I mean, guys, I was depressed over a full year before I finally crashed. Like, I was depressed, I think, 15 months before I got help. That is a long time. That is a long time. And I thought I was getting better. And when I would get better, I would crash again. And it was multiple things that were going on, right? It wasn't just one thing that I was going through. It was like three or four different things I was going through. And I this sounds crazy, I could see it coming. And my brain was telling myself, "You're going to crash at the end of the semester." And the semester end came, and I did. I crashed. I finished my master's, my second master's, fully depressed with a 4.0. Walked across that stage, and all I wanted to do was die. All I wanted to do was be dead. Mm. And, you know, that sounds absolutely bizarre, but that is how I felt. I didn't want to be alive. I didn't want to be alive. And I was like, what is the point? What is the point? And I, you know, in hindsight, again, 15 months before I finally got help, before my doctor finally said, "Amy, I'm sending you to a therapist. I want to go. Amy, you're going to get better. How do you know?" Right?
Mm-hmm. So how do you do that? How do you get a master's degree with a 4.0 when you're feeling that bad? I mean,
I don't know. I mean, I think it's back to that Enneagram 3. And the thing is, too, is like, yeah, like this is true. Like my hardest class is a literature class. And the class was supposed to be over Victorian literature, but this lady loved Charles Dickens so much that the whole class was about Charles Dickens. And this is a true story. So the true story is, I was like, okay, there's no way I'm getting a 4.0 in my master's. And my whole goal was to get an A in this class. And I knew she was super hard, super hard grader. So you guys are going to laugh at this. This is really funny. But in my depression, I was like, okay, how do I do this? And I thought, we had to write this big 20 to 30 page paper. And I said, okay, I've got to write about something that she's never heard of, right? Because this woman's brilliant. And all she's done is study Victorian literature her entire life. And she's like,
right? Okay.
So I found the most obscure topic ever. It's a true story. About the use of dinosaurs in Victorian literature. The mention of dinosaurs. Yeah. So Victorians were obsessed with dinosaurs because they were finding all these bones in England during this time period. And that's what I wrote a whole 20 to 30 page paper over.
Wow.
And the other thing too is, the other thing is that particular fall, I had to take my comps, right? So I had to take my comps. And so for this particular degree, I had to memorize all this stuff, and I had to go, and I had like 4 hours to write 4 insanely long essays. And I don't remember what happened. All I remember is that I cried the entire way up to the test. It was an hour drive. I remember it was raining, and I remember crying all the way home. And I remember crying, like, even when I was taking the test. And I passed the test with flying colors. To this day, I can't remember why I was upset. I just knew I was depressed. So who knows? I was probably just crying to cry. And you know what I mean? Like, it's crazy the things that you go through and you don't realize how strong or tough you were until later. And you're like, whoa. I did that. Like, I did that depressed. I did that, you know, and that's the crazy thing too, is like, there's people like Jackie, you were saying, you know, a lot of times we hide depression, and I thought I hid it, but the more I talked to people, people knew something was wrong.
Oh, really?
So I've had a lot. Yeah, I've had a lot of interesting conversations with people since then where they've said, I knew you were struggling. And then they tell me, and I'm just like, why didn't you say something? Like, why didn't you reach out? Not that any of these things would have helped me or saved me, but I really wished more people who knew I was struggling would have reached out, because I can tell you that 9 years later, I felt so alone in my depression, so alone. And not that nobody was there for me, but I can't think of hardly anybody that reached out to me and said, except for my boss, and I couldn't stand it at the time, that particular boss who, and that was it. That was the only person that I can remember who reached out to me and said, you're going through something. Mm-hmm. And it was the one person I didn't want to talk to, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Well, what a story, Amy. I mean, what a life. I mean, you've gone through so much, and to see how you have turned all that around and now you share with your friends and your students. I just keep feeling like you're in the exact right position where you're supposed to be to encourage so many people with what you've gone through, you know?
I agree. Yeah, I agree. And I just, you know, I don't know what's next or what will ever be next in my story. But like I was telling my friend today that I was telling you about when she said, you know, you saved me and I will always be grateful to you and love you for that. And I was bawling. And I just, you know, all I could think about is you just never know when you're that person for somebody. And what I told her on the phone, I was bawling when I said this. I said, you know, I'm glad I helped you. And what I tell people is I say, you know, I never wanted to go through depression. Nobody wants to. It's not on our bucket list, right? But if me deciding to not kill myself 9 years ago was to help save, or not save, because I don't believe that we can save people, but if me not going through or not going through with that 9 years ago was to help other people find their happy and to get through whatever it is they need to get through, then it was worth it that I stayed alive.
Yeah.
It was worth it that I didn't make that choice. But I also don't, I've actually lost a lot of friends and students to suicide, but I also don't, I understand why they do it, and it makes sense to me. And, you know, that's also a sad thing. And if you've lost somebody or had somebody that you love that's going through that, like that's hard. That's really hard. And I'm sorry that you are going through that and have somebody that's struggling with that, because it's not an easy place to be in.
Mm-hmm. Well, have you ever considered being a counselor when you're done with teaching?
I have, but I don't want to go back to school.
That's right.
So I'm done. It's
hard to find a dinosaur connection to counseling, right?
I know, right? Right. So I actually did some life coaching things. So I am a certified life coach, which is not the same thing. But you know, the thing that I feel like I'm good at and right now, and I feel like I'm, like I said, I feel like I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing, and I think sometimes that's just where you are. And, you know, for me, it's just living my life, learning more about myself, helping other people, you know, being a voice for these things. 'Cause it's different voices, right? It's different things that I carry. Like I have, you know, I've told you I've lost people, and sometimes I don't tell my story. Sometimes I tell somebody else's story, you know, and it's not necessarily my story to tell, but it's my story of how I was connected to somebody that I've lost. And I think that's part of it too, is just, you know, I don't want to be a counselor, but I can get you to somebody, you know? And,
yeah, right.
You know, and so, which there's nothing wrong with that either though. And I can be a good friend. And, I wrote a book a couple of years ago. I have not published it, and I kind of put it aside actually, and haven't totally completed my edits on it. And the reason I've done that though is, actually my high school English teachers from DCAB, they helped me edit it, and one of them passed away a year ago, and I just kind of haven't touched it since then. Yeah, because she was the last person to edit it, and I kind of got a little sentimental about that.
Oh, sure.
So, yeah, so I do have it within me to pick that up, and if I don't find someone to publish it, you know, because I am going to try and pitch it. And if it doesn't really pick up, if no one picks it up in about, you know, the 6 months, I'm going to put, I kind of told myself, hey, give yourself like 6 months of trying to find somebody to pick up the book. And if not, then I'm going to self-publish. And I'd like to do that sooner than later, though, because I do believe that, again, my story is not going to save people, but my story is going to help people. And like, I, like, for example, like I was talking to some airline attendant on an airplane last summer on, I don't know what trip. And she was talking about how her son was struggling. And I said, can I tell you my story? And she's like, yes. And I told her my story. And then I'm like, can I share my book with you? And she's like, yeah. And I have it in a Google Doc. And I just was like, have your son read this book.
Yeah.
And I said, it may not help him. It may, but like, so that's like the biggest thing is if I don't meet people, like I want my book to help people. And, you know, again, like I'm not going to save anybody. You have to want to get help yourself. But if my story can help point someone towards hope and towards getting better, then everything I went through was worth it.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing. Amy, thanks so much for sharing your story with us.
Yeah,
it's just incredible. Absolutely. You're just so resilient and so inspirational. I'm just excited to hear about all the people that you help in the future too. You just have a beautiful life, and you're just so, I love how you're so honest and down to earth and are willing to share all of these things with people. You know, some people aren't willing to share that, and you're just an open book, and I really appreciate that.
Thank you.
Thank you, Amy. It's been an honor talking with you, and we wish you the best in whatever you set out to do. We would also love to have you come on and talk with us again sometime in the future. And thank you for joining us. We'll be back again soon with another episode of Profiles in Perseverance. I'm going to go to the next one.